All right, the recorder's underway. So we're going to pick it up on page 584. This will be chapter 41, verse 1. And we will get through chapter 41 today. Oh, yeah, one more announcement I forgot to mention to you. My administrative assistant, Paul, is sick. He normally breaks down this room and sets it up for the class on Wednesday morning. I will try to remind everybody, if at all possible, if you could all break down the chairs and tables for me tonight, that would help. 8 tables would go in this corner over here, 4 tables back against the wall there, and we can just put all the chairs up against the wall by the fireplace, and then we can set it up in the morning very easily for the morning class. So I'll remind you at the end of the session, okay? And then it won't be such a hassle in the morning for us. Alrighty, everybody at chapter 41, and let's do a little bit of a review as we get underway. We've been walking through the temple. Our temple tour began outside the eastern gate with Ezekiel. The angel then measured in detail that eastern gate. After measuring the gate, Ezekiel went through it, and then we took a look at the outer court and the chambers around the outside of the outer court. After looking at those chambers, Ezekiel then moved over to the northern outer gate. We looked at that gate. We found out it was identical to the eastern gate. Ezekiel then took a walk around to the southern gate, and we examined that gate again. That gate was found to be identical. We learned that 7 steps went up to each gate, so the ground level is about 4 and a half feet below the level of the outer court. After looking at the southern gate, Ezekiel then went into the inner court, and we examined all 3 gates, southeast and north. We learned that these gates were identical to the outer gates, with the exception that there's 8 steps going up to each gate. So this rise, the ascent to the inner court, is maybe 4.5 to 5 feet. So the ascent is a little higher, from 7 steps to 8 steps. We looked at some of the buildings on the inner court. We examined the inner court briefly. We noted that the altar was in the center of it. And then Ezekiel moved over to the temple proper, and we began an investigation of the temple building proper. We began at the entrance to the temple building. And after examining the entrance, that brings us to chapter 41. Now in chapter 41, we continue on into the temple itself. We'll move on into the holy place, which is the first room of the temple. And as he does, he draws our attention to the posts in chapter 41, verse 1. Chapter 41, verse 1. Then he brought me to the nave and measured the side pillars. 6 cubits wide on each side was the width of the side pillar. So point A, he brought me to the temple. So now we're talking about that angel. The angel now brings him into the holy place, point B in your diagram here, room B in your diagram. And Ezekiel is allowed to go in there because Ezekiel is a priest, point A notes. And only priests are allowed to go into the front room, the holy place. And as he goes into that front room, the front posts or door pillars or door posts are measured, and they are 10.5 feet in a dimension. Both of them are identical. Now, point C, notice an interesting word that Ezekiel uses. He says on point C, which was the breadth of the tabernacle. Now, the NASB renders that word tabernacle as side pillar. I don't know why they do that. The literal Hebrew word there is tent. Tent or tabernacle. We don't know why Ezekiel uses that word. He may be, point C1, he may be referring to the Mosaic tabernacle. he may be telling us that the tabernacle could fit in that doorway, or that he was going into the equivalent of the tabernacle. I don't know. We will find that this doorway is 17 and a half feet wide in just a moment. The tabernacle was 15 feet wide, so it could fit in there. If he is referring to the tabernacle, he doesn't make any mention of silver or gold, which decorated the holy place of the tabernacle in the Solomonic temple. So we really don't know why he uses that word tent there. Kind of a puzzle. But side pillar is probably not the best rendition of the word. All right, in verse 2, we now get a look at the holy place itself. And we start in verse 2 again. The width of the entrance was 10 cubits, and the sides of the entrance were 5 cubits on each side, and he measured the length of the nave, 40 cubits, and the width, 20 cubits. Now let's, when he's talking about the door pillars, he's probably talking about these two door posts here that we mentioned in verse 1. And here's a close-up of another drawing, a close-up of the temple proper. And he's talking about that room. Here we have the 10 and a half feet thick doorposts right there. And the breadth of the entrance he mentions in point A1 is 17 and a half feet. So there's our 17 and a half foot measurement right here. 10 foot thick pillars, 17 and a half feet wide is the opening. And then he says the sides of the entrance, point B1, are 5 cubits or 8 3/4 inches. So he's talking about inches, 8 3/4 feet. He's talking about this distance here and this distance here, 8 3/4, 8 3/4, 17 and a half. So the entrance is very carefully measured. All right, let's move on to page 585, top of the page. Not only does the angel measure the doorway, but he also measures the room itself. And the length is 40 cubits or 70 feet. Here's that 70-foot measure on our diagram. And the width is 35 feet across. You take 8 3/4, and 17 and a half, and you come up with 35 feet across. Now notice point 4 at the top of the page. The dimensions are the same as the Solomonic temple, but more than twice that of the tabernacle. This is quite a bit bigger than the tabernacle. Point C on your outline, we now move to the Holy of Holies, or the inner room. So we move to the west, and the angel now enters the room that is the deepest within the temple, the Holy of Holies, or the inner sanctuary. On this diagram, the OS would stand for outer sanctuary and inner sanctuary here. So now we're looking at the most sanctified section of the temple itself. So we're verse 3 then. Then he went inside and measured each side pillar of the doorway, 2 cubits, and the doorway 6 cubits high, and the width of the doorway 7 cubits. Now point A, notice he went inward, point A1, not Ezekiel, but the angel went in. Now point 2 brings out the reason why Ezekiel did not go in. Ezekiel was not a high priest. He was a priest, but not a high priest. And we see very clearly from Hebrews 9, 6, and 7. You might change that reference there to Hebrews 9, 6, and 7 instead of Hebrews 9, 8. A little bit of a typo there. We see that principle laid out. Hebrews 9, 6, and 7. Now when these things have been so prepared, the priests, that's the average priest, are continually entering the outer tabernacle. That's a reference to the holy place, performing the divine worship. But into the second, and this is a reference to the Holy of Holies, but into the second, only the high priest enters once a year, not without taking blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of the people committed in ignorance. So again, this is a reference to the Mosaic system and the day of Yom Kippur when the high priest would go into the holy place. So that's the only person permitted in there. So Ezekiel does not go in there, just the angel. All right, back to our diagram here. Again, the doorposts are measured 3.5 feet thick. That would be the width of the doorposts here. And the entrance is 6 cubits, or 10.5 feet wide, the width of the doorway. And point C2, at the bottom of your page, points out that the breadth of the entryway to each room narrows down. Now here's what we're seeing. First of all, point A, the entrance itself to the tabernacle was 14 cubits or 24.5 feet wide. That's the entrance itself. Then as we come to the entrance of the holy place, point B, we see that it is 10 cubits wide, 17.5 feet, that measurement here. And then as we come to the Holy of Holies, we see the entrance is 6 cubits wide or 10.5 feet. So we move from 24.5 feet to 17.5 feet to 10.5 feet. And that's probably why the entrance is so diligently measured by the angel. And the idea here, point D, is increased sanctity. Increased sanctity is the emphasis as you approach closer and closer to the living God, to the Holy of Holies, and the place where God will manifest himself. So increasing sanctity is the idea. All right, page 586. He now talks about the breadth of the entrance, and he notes that it's 12 1/4 feet. And he's talking about this dimension right here on the doorpost. 12 1/4 feet here, 12 1/4 feet here, 10.5 feet there. Then he measures the room. The angel measures the room itself in verse 4. He measured its length, 20 cubits, and the width, 20 cubits before the nave, and he said to me, "This is the most holy place." So we have the length, 35 feet, 20 cubits, and the width is also 35 feet, 20 cubits, same width as the holy place. And then point D, the angel very specifically identifies the room. This is the most holy place. This is the Holy of Holies. So it's a square of 20 cubits. Now, if this temple is consistent with the tabernacle and with the previous temples, then the Holy of Holies would be a cube of 20 cubits. He only measures the length and width. But again, if it's consistent, it'll be 20 cubits by 20 cubits by 20 cubits, or 35 feet by 35 feet by 35 feet high. And that's reasonable to presume because of the pattern set by the tabernacle and other temples. The Holy of Holies was always a symmetrical cube. All right, point D. He now turns our attention to the wall of the temple and to the side chambers located in that wall. So we start in the first part of verse 5. Then he measured the wall of the temple 6 cubits. So he begins by measuring this inner wall of the temple here, 10.5 feet wide, 10.5 feet thick, very thick wall, very massive wall on the inside of the tabernacle. So it's 10.5 feet thick at its base. All right, page 587. Second part of verse 5, point 2 at the top of your page, second part of verse 5. And the width of the side chambers, 4 cubits all around about the house on every side. So now he turns our attention to these rooms. In this diagram, they're labeled SR, side room. We call them side chambers on your outline. And they are 7 feet wide. They are 4 cubits wide. And point B there, they're attached to the wall of the temple on the northwest and south side. So here's the north, the west, the south side. And of course, the east side would not have any rooms because it's the entrance to the temple itself. Point D on your outline. Why are they there? He doesn't tell us. Possibly storerooms, as your notes say, probably storerooms for temple equipment, such as 1 Kings 6, or perhaps storerooms for tithe offerings, like Malachi states in Malachi 3:10, because the temple was the place where you would store the offerings. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, speaking of the temple, that there may be food in my house. Again, a reference to the temple. And test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you a blessing until it overflows. So here God is encouraging the post-exilic community to obey the Mosaic law and to supply the tithe that the law demands, and he would bless them for obedience. So it's possible that these rooms might be used for something like that. We'll have to see when we get there. One thing he didn't do, which is maddening, he doesn't tell us about the purpose for some of these rooms, but he didn't describe the inside of the holy place at all, did he? Isn't that frustrating? He just gives us the dimensions, basically leaves it at that. What did Ezekiel see when he looked in there? You know, I want to know, but he doesn't bother to tell us. So we're going to have to wait. We'll find out later, you guys. Well, he peeked in, I'm sure. Oh, you don't think he peeked in at all? Okay. Maybe you're right.
Does he tell us later?
Hmm?
Does he tell us?
No. He doesn't really tell us what's in there. He just tells us the dimensions.
But the veil would be located within the holy place.
We'll get to the veil at the end of the lesson.
Can't wait.
We'll get there. All right, some things about Scripture just, you know, God's just saying, wait till you see the real thing, you know, just like those serial movies when I was a kid. Next week. Wait till next week. All righty. So the number of side chambers is mentioned in verse 6, first part of the verse. The side chambers were in 3 stories, one above another, and 30 in each story. So drop down to point 3b. And you see that these rooms are arranged on 3 sides of the temple. Now, we can interpret that statement in 2 ways. The Hebrew does allow us to interpret that statement in 2 ways. The first way we can interpret it, and probably the best option, is that as point B1B, there are 30 rooms on each of the 3 stories for a total of 90, as in this diagram here. As in this diagram here, they've drawn in 30 rooms around the temple, and then 3 stories, so 3 times 30 is 90, 90 rooms. Now, the second option is the majority opinion of the Jewish community, and they see only 33 rooms total, not 90, but 33. They see 5 on the north, and 5 on the south, and 1 large room to the west, as point B states. So 11 rooms on each floor, 3 floors, 11 times 3, 33. So we'll have to find out how many rooms there are when we get there. Page 588. Now, in the last part of verse 6, the construction of the side chamber is detailed for us. And the side chambers extended to the wall, which stood on their inward side all around. that they might be fastened and not be fastened into the wall of the temple itself. All right, drop down to point 4b. We know on point 4b that the wall of the temple is 6 cubits or 10.5 feet thick at its base. We will see in the next verse, point b1, that the thickness of the inner wall there diminished as it ascended, as it went up. And it ascended at 3 points, and those points served as a support for the beams of the 3 stories of the side chambers. And here's a diagram of it. Now this is, see, there's something in Scripture for everyone. And you see, this section of Scripture is especially set apart for architects, right? This is for all those architects that just wish there were something there they could draw. And this drawing was made by Lien Rittmeyer. He's the premier architectural archaeologist today. He's done a book called The Quest, which goes into all the temples except the Millennial Temple. And so this is a drawing of how he believes Solomon's temple was constructed. And so point C indicates, this is repeated in point C here, that there are rebatements or ledges built into the wall of the temple. That's 10.5 feet wide here. Then there's a 1 cubit ledge built in here, a 1 cubit ledge there, and a 1 cubit ledge here, supporting the beams of the outer rooms, the 3 stories of outer rooms. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, pretty straightforward, huh? All right, in verse 7, we get a look at the comparative sizes of these outer rooms. Verse 7. The side chambers surrounding the temple were wider at each successive story, because the structure surrounding the temple went upward by stages on all sides of the temple. Therefore, the width of the temple increased as it went higher, and thus one went up from the lowest story to the highest story by way of the second story. Now, I'm going to put up the English Standard Version here to emphasize one word that's probably better rendered by the English Standard Version. That one word is the word wound, and it became broader as it wound upward. All right, now why do I note that? I'll tell you in just a second. All right, back to our diagram. Point A1. The point of verse 7 is that the side chambers were wider as they went up. This chamber was the narrowest, then wider and wider. That's the idea. And this point 1A, you see the word there, encompassing? That's the Old American Standard rendition. But a better rendition would be the word winding or wound, as in the ESV. And the idea here is point B, that a winding staircase led upward to the top. Some kind of a winding staircase. So point 3 at the bottom. Apparently, as one ascended by a spiral staircase from the ground floor to the middle and upper stories, the chambers round about the temple widened in proportion to the rebatements in the wall. So all we need is a circular staircase going up here, and we'd have an idea of what it was like. Okay, any questions there? Question. There will be a little bit, basically, of the decorations. No, there's really no mention of the building materials here. Probably stone, but that would be an assumption. All right, page 589. Then the walls of the temple, the offsets are detailed here. The point A, the first story, the room is 7 feet wide right here. That's 7 feet wide. And then the second story, there's an additional cubit added on, so that's 8.75 feet wide. And then the third story, there's another cubit added on, and so this is 10.5 feet wide, or 10.5 feet wide here. So that's the details of this of this of these outer rooms. Now here is a diagram again of the outer rooms, and they have put stairways in here, but they haven't drawn them as circular stairways. So that S on your diagram does stand for a stairway. All right, now in verse 8, we come to the platform of the temple. Verse 8. I saw also that the house had a raised platform all around. The foundation of the side chambers were a full rod and 6 long cubits in height. So point A1. The temple stood on a raised platform 6 cubits above the level of the inner court. And that is 10.5 feet. So on this particular diagram, those who draw this diagram felt it's a foundation that just went around the outside of the temple. That's a possible way to look at it, that crosshatched area. Others feel it is a square platform on which the temple sat, something like that. And we know from verse 49 of the previous chapter that the temple was reached by steps. And the steps went up a 10.5 foot rise. I don't know why Ezekiel didn't mention this earlier. From the ground level to the outer court was 4.5 feet, 7 stairs. Then from the inner outer court to the inner court, another 4.5 to 5 feet, 8 steps. But now as we approach the temple, it's 10.5 feet. It's not this high or this high anymore. It's 10.5 feet high. That's as high as a basketball hoop. So as you approach this thing, you're looking at this massive wall and these flight of steps going up. I'm surprised it wasn't mentioned earlier, you know, when he first approached the temple. But you see how the ascent again speaks of increasing sanctity. Up 4 feet, up 4.5 feet, up 10.5 feet. So it must be awfully impressive to be walking up to the temple itself and seeing this massive staircase in front of you. So anyway, we get a quick look at that here in verse 8. Here in verse 8. All righty. Let's take a look then at verse 9. The walls of the side chamber. Verse 9. The thickness of the outer wall of the side chambers was 5 cubits, but the free space between the side chambers, let me reread that, but the thickness of the outer wall of the side chambers was 5 cubits, but the free space belonging to the side chambers, belonging to the temple, and it continues on in verse 10, we'll pick that up in just a second. Here he's talking about the thickness of the wall. Now some commentators think that this perhaps is this wall out here. Most feel that we're talking about a second wall on the outside of the side chambers here, and that that wall would be the secondary wall of the temple. But we have to now account for a space between the side chambers in verse 10. Let me reread verse 9 again. The thickness of the outer wall of the side chambers was 5 cubits, but the free space between the side chambers belonging to the temple and the outer chambers was 20 cubits in width all around the temple on every side. So commentators think that this would be the free space right here between chambers, some kind of chambers on the temple. So in this diagram, we take a look at this. That would be part of the platform itself. So point B there, at the bottom of the page, between the wall of the side chambers and the wall of the cells in the inner court on the north and south sides was a space of 20 cubits. So apparently that area right there is what we're talking about. And I now have 7:45, which is time for our break. So let's pick it up on verse 11. After your break, we'll pick it up on page 591 in verse 11 as we continue our architectural tour through the temple. All right, we're back underway again. Okay, let's pick it up on verse 11, the doors of the side chambers. This is the, we're continuing through the chapters that only an architect could love, right? Chapter 41, verse 11. The doorways of the side chambers toward the free space consisted of one doorway toward the north and another doorway toward the south, and their width of the free space, and the width of the free space was 5 cubits all around. So drop down to point 3. Point 9A3, the approach to the chambers was by an entrance in the north and south walls. So here's another diagram, and here they've drawn in the entranceway and a stairway, but again, the stairway is not circular in design. And they have an 8 3/4 foot wide wall on the outer side of the temple. So we've got one door to the north and one door to the south, and then one staircase, and that means you would have to get through each, to get to each side chamber, you would have to walk through the preceding chamber. No hallway is mentioned, so you go through each chamber successively to get to the ones at the end. Verse 12, point E at the bottom of the page, we come to the building of the separate place. Verse 12. The building that was in front of the separate area at the side toward the west was 70 cubits wide, and the wall of the building was 5 cubits thick all around, and its length was 90 cubits. Now, bottom of the page, very last point, point 3, says this building is toward the west. That means it will place it behind the temple. Now, in this diagram, it would place it in this area. Now, unfortunately, in this diagram, they put the same color as the outer court and the inner court back here. But actually, there would have to be a building back here. So I think that drawing could be revised. There has to be a building to the west of the temple. All right, page 592, that building is described. The wall of the building is 8 3/4 feet thick, and that building is 157.5 feet long. Point D, between the raised platform and the side chamber situated to the north and south was a space of 20 cubits. This was called the separate place, the Gizrah, to the west side with a large building measuring 70 by 90 cubits. And so again, point 2, along the temple was a specific building separate from the sanctuary proper. So here's the sanctuary proper in this area, so that must mean a building back in here, although this diagram doesn't have one. Now if you turn to your diagram on page 612, you will see to the west of the temple, you will see behind the temple, that space labeled the building of the separate place. So on that diagram, you do see a building located back there. So this diagram, I think, could be improved by noting that this is probably a building here. All right, the total dimensions of the temple with the separate place in verses 13 and 14. Verse 13, then he measured the temple 100 cubits long, the separate area with the buildings and its walls were also 100 cubits long. So apparently he's summarizing some of the material that he's covered earlier to show that the width of this temple area is the same 100 cubits as the inner court. 100 cubits along the western side would be the temple area. And if you turn to page 593 and add up all those cubits listed on points 2 and 3, you should come up with those dimensions. For the bottom of page 593, we come to the breadth of the area, verse 14, and also the width of the front of the temple that was Also, the width of the front of the temple and that of the separate areas along the east side totaled 100 cubits. And again, that the point is apparently that this is all the same width, this the inner court and the area of the temple as well, 175 feet. All righty. Now, there seems to be a typo on page 594. On page 594, you have point 4, the details, and you see the total is 900 cubits. Cross out the last zero. The total is 90 cubits, and then you add in two walls of 5 cubits each, you get 10 cubits or 100 cubits. So that 900 cubits is incorrect. Extra zero got added in there. Now he looks at the interior of the temple, beginning in the first part of verse 15. He measured the length of the building along the front of the separate area behind it with a gallery on each side, 100 cubits. So again, probably point C, point F, parentheses C, a summary of previous information. Same measurement, 100 cubits. Now he looks at the temple itself in the second part of verse 15. He also measured the inner nave and the porches of the court. We'll read through 17. The thresholds, the latticed windows, and the galleries round about their three stories opposite the threshold were paneled. Let me reread that verse 16 again. The thresholds, the latticed windows, and the galleries round about their three stories opposite the threshold were paneled with wood all around and from the ground to the windows, but the windows were covered. Over the entrance and to the inner house and on the outside and all the wall all around inside and outside by measurement. Now, that's kind of a tough section to read. But he's talking about the temple here. He's talking about the holy place and the Holy of Holies. And he's describing the decorations on the walls. Now, page 595 brings in that new information. This is all we know of the inside, basically, of these two rooms. We'll look at one piece of furniture in a moment. But notice on the top of page 595 that there is a paneling all around, an ornamented paneling. It's sealed with wood round about. So here he's referring to the ornamentation on the walls. He notes in point 4 that there's some windows. Apparently those windows, I don't know where they would be located unless they're located in these side rooms, but he does notice some windows in the temple. He notices that they're covered. And so our summary statements at the bottom of page 95 are probably the most important statements for you to note here. Point 4 and 5 toward the bottom of the page. These verses indicate that the interior of the temple was intricately paneled and surrounded. The veneering, point 5, the veneering of wood covered the walls from the ground, above the door, and all the walls of the Holy of Holies and the temple. So the temple interior is apparently covered with this wood. No gold is mentioned, but we are going to see that there are decorations, ornamentation in this wood. We see that on page 596 of your outline. Point 3 at the top of the page deals with the ornamentations of the inner walls, verses 18 and 19. It was covered with cherubim, with cherubs, and palm trees. And a palm tree was between cherub and cherub, and every cherub had two faces, a man's face toward the palm tree on one side, and a young lion's face toward the palm tree on the other side. And they were carved on all the house all around. So in verses 18 and 19, we see the decorations carved into the wood paneling. And we see that they're cherubim, or cherubs. with two faces. This is very, very reminiscent of some 50 lessons ago when we looked at Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 10, for example, when Ezekiel first saw the cherubim, the cherubs, and he described them. As for the form of their faces, each had the face of a man. Now, they have four faces, but I've just highlighted the ones that are used in the decoration. They had the face of a man. All four had the face of a lion. There's the second decorative motif for the Millennial Temple. On the right, and the face of a bull on the left, and all four had the face of an eagle. So those are the four faces of the cherubim, repeated in Ezekiel 10:14. In the 10th chapter, we read, and each one had four faces. The first face was the face of a cherub. Now, the bull is not mentioned here, so this would be a bull-like face. The second face was the face of a man. There's the decorative motif again. The third, the face of a lion. There's our motif for the Millennial Temple. And the fourth, the face of an eagle. Point 2A, if you look in 1 Kings 6, you'll see this is similar to Solomon's temple. And so our summary statements, point B and C, are the ones worth highlighting. The interior of the temple was intricately paneled and surrounded by a design of alternating palm trees and two-headed cherubs. The faces of each cherub was turned in opposite directions, so that each palm tree was between the human face of one cherub and the lion's face of the other cherub. Now, I wish I had a diagram that could put that up on the screen for you, but I hope you can visualize that. But I haven't found any drawings or any illustrations that would show us that decoration. But that's the inside of the temple, the walls. Now, the extent of this ornamentation, verse 20. From the ground to above the entrance, cherubim and palm trees were carved, as well as on the wall of the nave. So point 1A, these panels covered the walls from the floor to the level of the doors. Point B, the figures of the cherubs and trees covered the walls from the floor to the top. So again, a description of the paneling along the sides of the holy place and the Holy of Holies. Question, yes. They can be symbolic of that. It's not stated what they are, but yeah, they can be compared to Yeshua.
And I add that they lined up to the first four Gospels.
And yes, the first four Gospels does. I think I have a chart covering that in your notes way back at the beginning. So you could check the beginning of the notes. But yeah, they can be compared to the Gospels as well. Yeah. All right, the division of the two rooms. Now we're kind of getting to Don's question here with the veil. Verse 21. The doorposts of the nave were square. As for the front of the sanctuary, the appearance of one doorpost was like that of the other. So again, he goes back and he directs our attention to the door frames. And he's standing now in this area between the two rooms. He directs our attention to these door frames. But before he goes any further, he turns around and notes the altar of incense standing before the holy place. And that's in verse 22. The altar was of wood, 3 cubits high, and its length 2 cubits. Its corners, its base, and its sides were of wood. And he said to me, this is the table that is before the Lord. So he notes this altar of wood. Note point A1 there, 5A1. It's 3 cubits high, so it's about 5 1/4 feet high, about up to my nose. I'd have to stand on tippy toes to see over the top pretty well. And it's not too big. It's 3 1/2 feet square. And it's very clearly labeled on point C, the table before Jehovah. So it stands in front, point C1. It stands in front of the double doors which led into the Holy of Holies. So we see it right here, and this is the same position that the altar of incense took or occupied in the tabernacle. Here's a picture of the golden altar of incense, a rendering of the altar that possibly was in the tabernacle. It looks something like that. Now here's a cutaway drawing of the tabernacle, and you see the holy place here and the Holy of Holies in the background, and standing in front of the veil is the altar of incense. Now in the Solomonic temple, the arrangement was probably similar. Here we have the entranceway, we have the holy place, we have the Holy of Holies back here, and this is the altar of incense standing in front of the holy place. I also have a rabbinic rendition of Solomon's temple, and they have a veil separating the Holy of Holies, and they put the altar way to the front of the holy place. They put it quite a distance away. It is standing in front of the Holy of Holies, but a little bit further back in this illustration. Now, point C2 mentions there are four projecting corners, one on each side of the altar, and that's probably a reference to what's called the horns of the altar. Here's a rendition of the altar that was in the Herodian temple, the altar of incense. And this is a typical feature of altars to have these four horns or projections at the corners, symbolizing strength. So there were probably four horns on this altar as well. Now that final sentence in verse 22 uses the word table rather than altar. This is the table that is before the Lord. And as a result, point three, the bottom of the page, some take the second statement to be a reference to the table of showbread rather than the altar of incense. So they recognize that we have the altar of incense in view, but then they think that perhaps the angel just pointed over to the table of showbread and said, well, there it is, there's the table. So some commentators think there were two pieces of furniture in this room, but it's probably more in keeping with the context to refer to the altar of incense, one piece of furniture. Now, page 598, here we come to the doors of the temple. And this is the answer to Don's question here about the veil. So let's begin on verse 23. The nave and the sanctuary each had a double door. Now, two positions exist regarding the location of these doors. Point one, this is the majority, by far the majority position of the commentators. Point one, the temple and the sanctuary had two doors. The temple would refer to the nave or the holy place. So here would be a reference to doors in this location here. Point B, the sanctuary would be a reference to the Holy of Holies. So most commentators take position number two there. The doors which separated the porch from the holy place and the holy place from the Holy of Holies were double doors. So they see a doorway here, and this is Don's question, what about the veil? They see a doorway right here between the holy place and the Holy of Holies. Again, like I said, this is the vast majority of the commentators. But there is one commentary that's different. And ironically enough, it's not a Christian commentary. It's an Orthodox Jewish commentary, the Art Scroll Tanakh commentary that I use as part of my studies here. And the rabbis understand the verse to mean that only the entrance to the holy place contained doors. So the rabbis feel that the doors were only located here at the entrance to the holy place. And they feel that there were two sets of doors at the entrance to the holy place. And there's two versions of the doors. This is the version described in Midot 4:1. Midot is a chapter in the Mishnah. So here's the entrance hall where you enter the holy place. Here's the holy place, here are the sanctuary, and they see two sets of double doors opening in this manner. That's one view. Then there's the view of Rabbi Yehuda, and he sees these two sets of double doors opening in this fashion, like that. A little bit different alternative. Now, this is exactly the opposite of what you'd expect, isn't it? Isn't it exactly the opposite of what you'd expect? You would expect the Christian commentators to look at the Hebrew and feel that it means that there was that the doors into the holy, there was no doors in front of the Holy of Holies, that the only doors would be in the holy place. Now, why would Christian commentators, why would you think that Christian commentators would feel that way? That's because of the statements in the New Testament regarding the veil that separated the holy place from the Holy of Holies and the fact that it was torn open when Yeshua died, right? Matthew 27:51. Behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook and the rocks were split. Mark 15:38. The veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Luke 23:45. The sun was obscured and the veil in the temple was torn in two. Was the veil in the temple torn in two? You better believe it. Three witnesses, okay? Now, the veil that he's talking about normally separated the Holy of Holies from the holy place. Here we have a diagram of the tabernacle, and there's a rendition of the veil. There's the Holy of Holies. Here's the holy place. The Solomonic Temple, the rabbis draw a veil there. Again, behind that veil is the Holy of Holies, and in front is the holy place. This is a rendering by Rittmeyer of Herod's veil. Behind that veil would be the Holy of Holies. And here to the front, where we're standing, is the holy place, where the priest is pouring the incense on the incense altar. And this would, yes, that's exactly it. This was the one that would have been split when Yeshua died. Okay? Now, what's the importance of that veil being split? That's brought out into the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verses 19 through 22. The writer states, "Therefore, brethren, since we have confidence to enter the holy place," that's a reference to the outer room. "We have confidence to," excuse me, that's the Holy of Holies. "We have confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Yeshua," by the blood of Jesus, "by a new and living way which he inaugurated for us through the veil," that is his flesh. So here the writer of Hebrews very clearly associates the tearing of the veil with the death of Messiah. That it's a picture of the death of Messiah, and because the Messiah died for us as our substitute and our high priest, we now have access to the Holy of Holies, the holy place. Okay? "And since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a sincere heart, full of assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water." So that's the importance of the torn veil. A picture of what Yeshua did for us and the access he gave us directly into the presence of God. So you would expect the Christian commentators to affirm that the way into the Holy of Holies was opened through the death of the Messiah. And therefore, there would be no door present at the entrance of the Holy of Holies. But instead, it's the Orthodox Jewish commentary, which rejects Yeshua, that sports the idea that the way into the Holy of Holies was open. All right, you make your choice. That's up to you to make a choice. Which one do you think is better? I vote for the rabbis. In this case, I don't vote for them because they're rabbis. I vote for their position because of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Hebrews. So I think that's the better position, that there is no veil, there is no doorway here into the Holy of Holies. Okay? You take your own position, okay? But remember, when you read the commentaries, you'll get a different position than the one I take. All right, the construction of these doors is highlighted in verse 24. These are the doors to the outer sanctuary. The door is here. Verse 24. Each of the doors had two leaves, two swinging leaves, two leaves for one door, and two leaves for the other door. So as you read this diagram, I come to the opinion that Rabbi Yehuda was probably right in his assessment of how the doors were constructed. Two leaves on this door, two leaves on that door, and so each door was made up of four leaves. And the distance here being, I forget the distance there. Anyway, that's okay. Let's see. The distance here being 17 and a half feet. All right, let's move to page 599. The beginning of verse 25, we note the decorations on these doors. First part of verse 25. Also, there were carved on them, on the doors of the nave, cherubim and palm trees like those carved on the walls. And so the same motif, the same decorative motif is carried out on the doors. Now, the same motif we found on the walls. Now, here is Rittmeyer's model of Solomon's temple. And he sees doors separating the holy place from the Holy of Holies. And on these doors, he places decorative cherubs. So these are often considered renditions of cherubs in the ancient Near East. So he has a similar kind of motif on his model there. So this is similar decorations to Solomon's temple, point two. Then he covers the threshold in verse 25b, second part of the verse. And there was a threshold of wood on the front of the porch outside. So there's some kind of, point one, some kind of canopied porch in the front of the holy place. And the literal word threshold there is beam. And the beams serve to hold the walls of the temple and the porch together. So this apparently is similar to the Solomonic temple. Here's the Solomonic temple with its vestibule, its entranceway, and we have a beam over the top. We have freestanding pillars. Again, that's a design element that's found in the Millennial Temple as well. So apparently the front of the Millennial Temple is very similar to the front of the Solomonic Temple. Then the decorations in verse 26. There were latticed windows and palm trees on one side and on the other, on the sides of the porch. And thus were the side chambers of the house and the thresholds. So he notes that there's windows and palm trees on both sides of the porch entrance. And somehow that's related as well to the side rooms. So again, a very similar design. Solomon's temple had a very similar design to the Millennial Temple. Here are those side rooms. And again, notice the ledges built into the walls of the temple to support the rooms and how the rooms got wider as they went up. So again, another similar design feature, but this is just a three-quarter view drawing. So these two temples are very, very similar. Very, very similar. Now, page 600. We come to the conclusion. It's the last part of the verse in verse 26, which we have read already. And you can see on page 600, again, a diagram of the temple with the major elements mentioned in the scripture pointed out there. So that's another diagram you can keep for your reference when you ponder this section of scripture again. All right, so that brings us now to chapter 42. And guess what? I only have a minute and a half left. So we will pick it up next week at chapter 42, page 601, as we continue our tour through the chapters that architects love, and we'll get continued references to the temple here. Now, notice the amount of material spent on the temple is quite large, isn't it? And this emphasizes to us the importance God places on the Millennial Temple. It's going to be a very, very significant place and building on planet Earth during the Messianic Kingdom. And so he's, even though we don't understand a lot of this material and it's hard to visualize it, still notice that chapter after chapter emphasizes the importance and sanctity of this building. So let's continue to work through it patiently as we get to chapter 42. All right, let me close with prayer and I'll turn you loose, but then again I want to remind you, if you could break down the tables and chairs for me. Again, 8 tables in that corner. I think it's 4 tables back in that corner. Lester, you know the routine, don't you, from years past? So help guide everybody. Let's put all the chairs then, stack the chairs up carefully just against the wall here in front of the fireplace, and that'll help us set up tomorrow morning quite quickly for the class we have tomorrow morning. No, don't. Well, if you can get people to put a square in the center, that'd be okay. That's what we're going to do tomorrow morning. Do you want to take charge of that? Okay, your sergeant is our ex-Marine Lester here, okay? He was. We used to clean up every week and set it up. But since I've got Paul helping, we don't have to worry about that. But Paul's sick, so we do. It'd be great help if you do it today. All right, let me pray, and then I'll turn you loose. Father, again, I want to thank you for the chapter we went through, and again, the importance of this temple that you're describing. And Lord, as we meditate on it, and as we think on it, and as we try to figure out exactly what you're talking about here, help us to do that with a sense of anticipation that someday we will stand in front of this building and we'll see the real thing. And we'll experience great joy as we do that. So give us a sense of anticipation and awe as we ponder these chapters. And then, Lord, one of the key lessons of this chapter is that rent veil. The fact that Yeshua went to the cross on our behalf and his death on our behalf opened the way into your presence. There's no veil separating us from you in these days. So we can go in boldly with a pure heart, pure conscience. So we thank you for what Yeshua did for us, and we thank you that that is also portrayed here in the Millennial Temple. So again, as we ponder this great truth, help us to ponder it with joy and thanksgiving. And we lift this request up to you in Yeshua's name. Amen.